You're listening pretty late. It's Friday night, and I know that this is a night when people want to unwind and have a good time. Well, here, first of all, the Blackhawks lost 6-0, so that's already that ship has sailed. And as you know, I have been in Springfield most of the week. I just got back yesterday. I learned a lot, and I feel like I unlearned a lot. It was an interesting experience. And one of the things that we were doing last year was our budget crisis corner. We invited one legislator from the Republican Party and one legislator from the Democrat Party. And we wanted to bring that back because we are now going into 18 months of not having a full budget. There was a stopgap budget, which expired not too long ago. And I want everyone to the reason we do this is I want to encourage everyone to be informed. And I want to do this in the most amicable way. And we invite you to join the conversation. Please call or text us at 312-981-7200. James Vickery joins me in studio. Hey, James, how are you doing?
Hello, I'm great.
You and I were together on election night.
We were.
and since then, we've been talking a lot about how to be involved, what to do. And I think the most important thing is to be informed and to know what's going on, because we sort of have these, we have generalizations about each party. We have ideas about House leadership, about the governor. And really what it comes down to are your local legislators. And joining me in studio is Republican legislator in the House of Representatives, David Harris, who represents the 53rd District. He has been in the chamber since 2010, previously serving from 1983 to 1993. And by the way, a retired general. This is, I believe, we've talked on the phone, but I believe you're my highest ranking military officer ever in studio. Thank you so much.
Good to be with you, Patty.
Thank you for joining us tonight. And also joining us tonight is Representative Will Guzzardi of the 39th District. He's a North Carolina native who first worked for Huffington Post and lost in 2012 was your first run at the office for House of Representatives, losing to someone who was pretty well entrenched in politics in Chicago, Tony Barrios.
That's correct.
And then only lost by 125 votes and then came back to win that seat by 1,843 votes. And the reason I mentioned the numbers, and I didn't see numbers for Representative Harris, but the reason I mentioned that is people always think, well, what difference does it make if I vote? My voice doesn't count. No one listens to me. I think that your election shows that people paid attention. You live in an area that people kind of framed as hipsters versus Hispanics, which was sort of a generic way to put it, because I think that generalization is unhelpful to people who want to be involved. Representative Harris, what do you want people to know about what is going on in the House of Representatives, in the General Assembly, in the state of Illinois?
I want them to know that we, as legislators, are as frustrated as they are. We want to see a budget. We want to see resolution to this impasse, and we'd like it to happen sooner rather than later. We understand that there is real damage being done to to our state fiscally, and we are digging a hole each day, digging a hole deeper than it was the day before. It's got to stop. We got to bring it to an end.
Because I have seen you get very passionate about legislation, whether it was from your side of the aisle or presented by the other side of the aisle, that a lot of solutions that people are presenting are really causing worse problems than they are creating a solution. And I think that it's important, again, for people to know that they can contact you. Are you hearing from your constituents?
Oh, absolutely. I think we all are. We're all hearing from our constituents. And we recognize the magnitude of the problem. We're getting the word loud and clear.
Would you say more so in the last year? Because when I first talked to people 2 years ago, it seemed as though people weren't as involved. They weren't reaching out as much. Is that escalating for you as far as emails and phone calls?
Well, it is. Interestingly, I may not get as many contacts as perhaps a legislator from the inner city of Chicago, as an example.
Sure.
The individuals in my district may not rely on the social services as much as individuals in other districts. However, there is an impact across the board. I have individuals, families who are reliant on services for the developmentally disabled, the school districts, across the board. So it's not just in certain locations around the state, but rather throughout the state.
And what is the best way for someone to have an impact in reaching you? Is it phone calls? Is it an email? Is it stopping by your office? Or is it kind of any one of those?
Oh, both. Absolutely both. I mean, any and all. Pick up the phone, write me a letter, send me an email, come into the office. I mean, it's a full-time office. We're there 5 days a week. And I'm happy to meet with anybody any other time. One of the things, though, Patty, this is part of the frustration, is that, and I don't know if my colleague here will agree with me, but the legislature is a leadership-driven institution, okay, meaning that even though all of the legislators may be frustrated with what's happening, if the Speaker of the House and the President of the Senate come up with an agreement and it can't get past the governor, you don't have an agreement. Nothing happens. Vice versa. I mean, I can introduce a budget, but it's not going to see the light of day in a Democrat-controlled legislature. So the point there is that there has to be agreement between the General Assembly and the governor for something to happen, and that's right now what we don't have. We don't have an agreement.
Representative Guzzardi, what do you want people to know about what's going on in the House of Representatives?
Well, I think to say that we're all frustrated is to put it mildly. I think there's real anger on the part of the constituents and also on the part of many of us in the chamber. Embarrassment. I mean, it's embarrassing what the state is going through right now, our inability to provide the most basic services for people who desperately, desperately need them. We may watch universities close, right? If we don't do anything this semester, right, in the spring, we're going to see Chicago State, Western Illinois, Eastern Illinois. Universities might close their doors if we don't act. Social service agencies have already shut their doors. We're turning people away. We're leaving people in the streets or turning people to nursing homes or prisons. I mean, it's embarrassing. And I think that the fundamental dynamic that's happening in Springfield, it's deeply broken, right? We've got, on the one hand, the governor, who has proposed a set of what he calls reforms, which are openly hostile to the basic interests of the Democratic Party, right? Which, Representative Harris talks about moving toward consensus and trying to build agreement between the parties. And that's exactly right. It's exactly what we need to do. And the governor has shown, in my view, very little interest in doing that. And frankly, so has the Speaker of the House. You know, the leader of the Democrats in the House of Representatives has simply said no to what the governor wants to do without proposing any of our own ideas. And so we're caught in this logjam. Where on the one hand, we have a set of ideas that are totally unpalatable to Democrats and to most people in the state of Illinois. On the other hand, we got essentially silence from Democratic leadership on what we ought to be doing to move our state forward. And that that is a toxic dynamic, and it's one I think we need to get out of.
You bring up an interesting point, and I want to talk about Speaker Madigan when we come back, because I think that he's become part mythology and this villain, but also, I mean, obviously a very powerful presence in the state of Illinois, and many people think one of the most powerful politicians in the country. And he was, again, elected to Speaker of the House on Wednesday, and some interesting moments during the inauguration. So let's talk about Speaker Madigan when we come back, because I know that people feel very strongly, and of course, Governor Rauner has made his thoughts known in many different ways. So more when we come back. Again, join our conversation anytime. 312-981-7200. How are you doing, James?
I am so good.
Do you need whiskey yet?
312 after midnight.
Yeah, right. 312-981-7200. Please join our conversation. More after this on 720 WGN. You are listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez. It's Friday night, and I know, you know, there's some people want to unwind. You're going out. Maybe you're in for the night, relaxing a little bit. And here I am bringing up state politics. But this is the best night of the week for me to invite our legislators in studio. I prefer to have people in studio. I think it's an interesting dynamic. I like sitting down, having a conversation with them, with our listeners, with you. We have in studio with us Representative Will Guzzardi, who serves the 39th District. He is a Democrat. From the 53rd District, we have Representative David Harris. He is a Republican. And, I want to be able to have a balanced conversation. That's why we do this. I know that people feel like they know where I stand on things. I think assuming is always the strangest thing, but I'm passionate about justice. That's really what it comes down to, is knowing that people are being equally treated, that they have access to services that are important to them. Education is important to me. Services for the disabled, obviously, you know, are near and dear to my heart. And we have online with us Judy, who wants to join the conversation. Hi, Judy. How are you doing?
Hi, Patty. Love you.
Thank you. I love you, too.
I didn't vote for Rauner because I felt right from the beginning that this is what he wanted. I think if somebody would agree with him, he'd be fine with that, too. But I think he came in wanting to break unions, and if he couldn't, he was just going to break Illinois. He just dug in his heels, and that's what he wants.
And I've heard a lot of that too. Representative Harris, what would you say to that? Because Governor Rauner did run on, I'm going to be able to get things done. I'm going to work with Madigan and we're going to make, I believe that was part of his platform. Is it your understanding that he said he could work with Speaker Madigan, Judy? Do you remember that?
I know that he did not say that he was going to do these things, just as I also have land in Wisconsin, so when Walker came in, I have some relatives up there, and they said, oh, he didn't say he was going to do that. Well, neither did Rauner. He didn't say, oh, I'm going to come in here and shut down the state if I don't get what I want. Right. He was very conciliatory sounding. I'm going to fix this pension problem. Well, he knew that he couldn't fix it.
Interesting. So, Representative Harris, what's your understanding of what Governor Rauner came in attempting to accomplish?
Remember what in essence, the mantra of his campaign was when he first ran, and it was a simple phrase. He came in to shake up Springfield.
That's okay.
A quote, shake up Springfield. I don't recall that he said he was going to be able to work with or unable to work with anyone else, but he was going to shake up Springfield. And I think that's what he's trying to do. He's trying to make changes which, in the long term, will benefit our state. In the meantime, though, in the short term, we have a real problem. And the problem stems not from any, I think we can't impugn a motive that is harmful to Governor Rauner for the state of Illinois. I don't think he came in with that sort of a goal. He came in with a goal of trying to improve the state. Where we are now stems from really, in my opinion, one basic fact, and that is at the beginning of 2015, the temporary income tax that we passed decreased. It went from 5% to 3.75% on the individual rate, and the corporate rate was lowered as well, meaning that for the next fiscal year, we took in $4 billion less than we took in before. And we continued spending at a rate that was at the level that we were at before. So there's a clear imbalance dollar and cents-wise, and they haven't been able to come to an agreement as to what do we do with revenues and what do we do with expenditures to bring them into balance. The governor wants to make changes which he believes are going to benefit Illinois in the long term, and the speaker represents, speaker and the president of the Senate represent interests for their parties, which are big interests. I respect that, but at the same time, the bottom line on a lot of this is politicians, compromise is the political grease mm-hmm. that makes the system work. And without any sort of compromise, we are stuck.
That's what I've noticed. I have seen that there is and almost bills that are introduced sort of like, fine, here's something that's kind of what you want. And we know it's not going to work. That's what I saw, at least in 2015. Will Representative Will Guzzardi, what would you say to somebody who thinks that Governor Rauner is here to break the state?
Yeah, well, I think fundamentally, and if you talk to the governor about the subject of labor unions, you feel it very quickly. The governor fundamentally believes that what's wrong with this state is that labor unions control the Democratic Party. The Democratic Party controls government. And so they cut these sweetheart deals for all their union members who have, now they have these great pay and these great benefits. And that's what's bankrupting the state. And the solution to this is to break the power of the unions and thereby reduce people's wages, reduce people's benefits. And that will make the state more friendly to business. I think that's the governor's fundamental philosophy about what's wrong with Illinois and how to fix it. I happen to disagree. I happen to think that the problem with Illinois isn't that it's too hard to be a billionaire or a huge corporation. I think the problem with Illinois is that it's too hard to be a regular family trying to get by, that your property taxes are high and that you're struggling with not receiving the services that your family deserves, whether it's a quality public education or an affordable higher education or human services that you need. I think the problem lies in stagnating wages for working people, higher costs for working people, and just it being generally harder to get by for families that are trying to get by in this state, right? And I think the solution to that problem doesn't lie in lowering wages and lowering benefits and participating in this race to the bottom to try to recruit corporations here by saying we pay workers the least in Illinois. I think the solution lies...
Would be horrible.
Well, that's what's happening in this country right now. I mean, states are competing against each other to recruit businesses and jobs by saying we will pay workers less than the other guy. Or we will charge you less taxes than the other guy, right? We're going to give you these hundreds of millions of dollars of tax breaks, and states are competing one against the next for who can charge corporations lower tax rates.
I did, Representative Harris, I mean, I'm sure you've seen the billboards that were off the Kennedy that would say, are you Illinois? Come to Indiana. I mean, that sounds like kind of what he's referring to as far as states competing for corporate interests or businesses.
Oh, there's no question about it. As a matter of fact, my son works for a major automobile manufacturer. And they had been for many years headquartered in New Jersey. And within the past 2 years, they moved to Georgia. Mm-hmm. And the reason they moved to Georgia was because Georgia offered them a whole bunch of benefits to come down to move to Georgia. And when New Jersey found out about it, they tried to step in and say, oh, no, we'll counter the benefits. But by that time, it was too late. My point is that, yes, indeed, states indeed do go out there and compete for businesses. And they offer tax incentives and benefits in order to attract businesses, but those businesses bring in jobs. And I want to go back to a point that my colleague made. I don't know that the governor wants to break the unions in the state of Illinois. I don't believe that. I mean, look, anybody who wakes up in the morning should realize Illinois is a unionized state, okay? Let's get past that. But at the same time, should public service unions in the state of Illinois exert the type of influence that they have over the past number of years? Does everything need to be collectively bargained? No, not everything needs to be collectively bargained. Maybe there is some latitude there. So I don't know that it's a question of breaking the unions as much as it is coming up with some reasonable reforms that make things a little bit less onerous for the business community in the state of Illinois.
We have to go to a break. Will, did you want to say something?
Yeah, actually, Patty, I just want to ask the gentleman a quick question. I've actually been doing in the news tonight the fact that AFSCME has called for a strike vote later this month. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean that if the vote is yes, they're going to go ahead with a strike. It just means they're going to authorize their bargaining apparatus to move forward with a strike if and when they decide to do that. Can you just have the guys explain to us the procedures involved in that and what that might mean to the state?
Wow, they both just took a big, deep breath. can we, because we have to go to the news, let me let them work on that question and repose it. And we have listeners on the line. Danny and Pat, I ask you to hold on. Judy, thank you so much for calling, and we always appreciate everyone contributing. This is already off to a great conversation. More after this on 720 WGN. You're listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase studio. It's Friday night, so of course we're talking politics. It makes complete sense. Makes sense in my head. It makes sense because there are so many important things going on in the state, or not going on in the state. We are entering 18 months without a budget. The stopgap budget expired not too long ago. We have in studio with us Representative Will Guzzardi of the 39th District. He's a Democrat. We have Representative David Harris of the 53rd District. He is a Republican, and I like having these conversations so that we can hear both sides of it. And one question that came up that Rob Martier posed to the gentleman was?
Yeah, let me rewind first before I re-ask the question, Patty. Guys, last year the State Labor Relations Board basically ruled in favor, if you will, Governor Rauner, that negotiations between the administration and AFSCME had come to an impasse, basically giving Governor Rauner the authority to now impose whatever agreement he sees fit on the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. Well, that union today said that they're going to call for a strike authorization vote at the end of the month. It will last through mid-February. If it's yes, that will give the bargaining apparatus of the union the authority to then go ahead with a vote. Yes. Where would that leave the state, and what kind of dire straits does that put the rest of us in if, in fact, they go on strike?
Well, let's not assume that they're going to go on strike. First of all, a little bit of history without going too much into the weeds. The Illinois Public Labor Relations Act was passed back, I think, in 1983 or 1984, and there haven't been many changes to it since then. And the whole issue of labor relations, public labor relations, are governed by the law, and it's sort of a minuet dance. The governor negotiates with the public service unions on behalf of the people of the state of Illinois, as he did this time. They entered into negotiations. The governor felt that they had reached impasse. It went to an administrative law judge. The administrative law judge said, yes, you are at impasse. It then went to the Labor Relations Board. The Labor Relations Board said, yes, they're at impasse, which means the governor can impose the provisions that he wants to see. The unions can appeal that. And if I'm not mistaken, it's in the circuit court right now. But as you correctly say, the unions, in preparation for what may come down from the circuit court, have asked for the authority from their members to go on strike. Whether or not they will do that remains to be seen.
And listen, I think that no one, I don't think anyone wants to see the government workers go on strike. I mean, you're talking about the people who provide some of the most important services in our state, you know, the Department of Human Services, right? I mean, these are people who are taking care of managing cases for vulnerable people in this state. We don't want to see those folks walk out. But I think the one person who has at least at times appeared to want this to happen is the governor, who said during his campaign that, you know what, we'd take a strike from AFSCME. We'd let them walk out for a week or a couple of weeks if that's what it meant to break them, if that's what it took to break them. You know, the governor has continued since he became governor in his negotiations with the union, pushing a really extreme set of terms. AFSCME has made proposal after proposal of concessions they are willing to make, but none of them has been good enough for the governor. So it seems like he is eager to see this. It seems at times anyhow that he is eager to see this strike happen, to see government shut down in order to use that as a sledgehammer to break the power of the union.
And to that, I'm sorry, did you want to
Well, I was simply going to say my colleague has taken a very partisan stance here in terms of what he thinks the governor wants to do. I don't agree with that. The negotiations were extremely detailed, going over months and months and months. Whatever offers and counteroffers were made, I'm not privy to all of them, but I don't think that the governor wants to see a strike in the state of Illinois.
Well, we have a listener who, to your point about what the governor wants or doesn't want as far as his agenda, he's called it the turnaround agenda, the reform agenda. Hey, Danny, thank you so much for hanging on so long. I appreciate it. I know you wanted to join the conversation and wanted to contribute. What do you want to tell the gentleman?
Well, just listening to both of you, I'd say why don't we give what Republicans want to do a try, as we've been doing what Democrats want since I can remember, and this is why we're in the mess we're in. You know, you talk about the other gentleman for the Democratic Party talks about how Rauner wants to drive down worker wages. He doesn't want to drive down private sector wages. He wants to drive down ridiculous union wages. I was reading the other day where the average auto worker makes $47 an hour to stand there and watch an assembly line robot do all the work. The rest of the world, America, is sick of this. You know what I mean? I'm all for a fair wage for a fair day's work. But first of all, provide for your own retirement. You know, I've never taken one nickel of taxpayer money, and I've put aside enough to, you know, ensure that I'll have at least a decent retirement. That's the problem. You know, these guys do work for 20, 30 years, and then the rest of us have to pay for them for the next 40 years. You know, provide for your own retirement. That'd be a nice place to start with these unions.
There's a couple of things that I know, but I think Representative Guzzardi has some thoughts.
Well, a few things. First of all, I think you're absolutely right that the Democratic Party was in charge for a long time and was in large part responsible for the fiscal condition that the state finds itself in and for the condition that working families in the state find themselves in. I mean, I ran for office against an incumbent Democrat because I didn't think the Democrats were doing a terribly good job, and I thought that we ought to be doing better for working people. So I hear you. I don't think that the Democrats have been this sort of paragon of virtue in terms of how we have run government. That said, I mean, there's example after example when you look around the country. States that go right to work, right? States that bust up their public sector unions, wages go down not only for formerly unionized employees, but across the board. Unions, when the upward pressure that unions exert on wages does good for people in the private sector, does good for people who are not members of unions. Illinois has a higher average rate wage for non-union employees than our neighboring right-to-work states. So that's helping out everybody. When work is valued more highly, everyone gets paid better. So I think it's important to point out that these benefits aren't for everybody. And in terms of the pensions and the retirement question that you brought up, if you look at the new employees in the unions, the tier two pension benefits, we have really trimmed the benefits way back, right? That being said, I think that everybody ought to be entitled to a decent, stable retirement. I think it's unfair that people have to play the stock market with their retirement, that people have been pushed out of pensions and into 401ks. I think it stinks that everybody has to be like gambling and hoping that they might be safe, stable, and secure when they retire.
Well, the gentleman brings up a very he brought up a couple of issues, but one of the key issues he's mentioned, of course, are pensions, and the pension issue in the state of Illinois is one of our most vexing one of our most vexing issues. And I will tell you that I believe that the ruling from the Illinois Supreme Court on the pension bill that was passed a year and a half ago, or 2 years ago, actually, a 7-0 ruling, in essence, handcuffed the ability for the legislature to make meaningful changes. Now, some would say you're not supposed to make any meaningful changes, but at the same time, we have a pension system which is really straining the financial resources of our state. So hopefully we can make some changes which meet constitutional muster and will lower that burden that we have to carry.
And one thing that Danny said, which is pay for your own retirement, they have. People who are, you know, firefighters, police officers, teachers, people who have paid into their, they did pay into their pensions. That, yeah. And people seem to have, the, I mean, I know that firefighters pay in actually at a higher rate than maybe perhaps other people do. They don't collect Social Security because they're obstructed from that. They can only receive their pensions that they've been promised, that they have paid into.
It was state government that didn't pay its share. Right.
Right. They yeah. kicked the can down. And we talk about the can, we've run out of field. Okay, we have run out of run out of territory because I talked to a retired legislator who said that they use it as a credit card and didn't understand the terms, the agreement as far as what that would cost down the road.
Yeah, there's no question. There is agreement on both sides of the aisle that what the legislature did, especially in the right after 2000 in the early 2000s, was extremely, extremely harmful. But there's three basic problems. One, the legislature didn't put in the payments that that they should have for the pension system. Two, and I joke around when I go to my senior folks and who are pensioners, and I say, you know, the system was based on folks who are expected to die around 65 or 68. And we're living a lot longer, that stretches out our liability. So if we will all sign a contract to die when we're 65 or 68, that'll help solve the problem.
Don't put that on your platform to run a campaign.
And they joke, and it's meant as a joke, obviously. But seriously, the Chicago Teachers Pension Fund, 20% of the retirees in the Chicago Teachers Pension Fund, now that's not a state fund, but 20% of the retirees are over 80.
Right.
Well, that simply that lengthens out your tail. The other problem, of course, is the expected rate of return is around 7, 7.5. Well, they've lowered it now to about 7%. I'd love to be getting 7% on my money year in and year out, and that is getting harder and harder to do, and that's putting a burden on the employer, namely the state of Illinois, to put more money into the system.
That's absolutely right. All that is true, and the burden. It's time for us to start paying these bills, right?
Don't you think we could get things done if we just had everybody in my studio and on the microphones? And just, that's absolutely true. Like
there really is something about sitting around the table.
There's one thing that I do want to say to Danny, and I wish he was sitting around the table with us here.
He's still on the phone.
Oh, great.
Yeah, I got him there. I just wanted to make sure that you guys could answer.
The thing I'll say,
I had one other point I wanted to make, but go ahead.
Sure. I guess the thing I'll say is that I think I would rather that we, as a society, when we think about questions like the one you brought up, instead of asking how come that other guy has it so much better than I do, that we ask, why don't I deserve the same benefits he has, right?
Right.
Why shouldn't I be sure that I'm going to get a decent retirement? Why shouldn't I have wages?
And what am I doing toward that end?
Right. I just think that's the kind of question that rather than sort of tearing each other down, I think that's the kind of the way of thinking about it that we can lift each other up together.
Danny, one more point because I have to take a break, but go ahead. I have something for you and Pat, so hold on the line. Go ahead. Yes.
My other point was another thing that troubles me about Democrats, and this is just isn't in Illinois, but on a national level, your desire to raise minimum wage to $15, which is going to absolutely destroy senior citizens who are on fixed incomes, because when everything else goes up to offset that, their Social Security and whatnot isn't going to go up. And the people who you're going to give the $15 an hour to are going to have no more buying power than they had when they were making $10 an hour. That's just simple economics, and it's really troubling that guys like Sanders and others are using this as a carrot to dangle in front of fast food workers to get their votes.
Well, I understand your frustration with that. I guess I would just point out that $10 an hour, 40 hours a week, if you're lucky enough to get it, right? You're talking about $400 a week. That's $1,600, $1,800 a month. If you have a family, that is simply not a wage on which you can sustainably live. With the cost of living in the city of Chicago, I can't possibly imagine how you might be able to raise a child and pay for rent and pay your bills on $10 an hour, which is what you're making flipping burgers
By getting welfare from the state of Illinois or federally funded. Like the number of people who work for Walmart or other organizations like that. I'm sorry, go ahead, Representative.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. I mean, there are social programs which enable folks to get benefits from the state of Illinois. And as an example, one of the ones that is really beneficial is something known as the Earned Income Tax Credit for people who do work, not for folks who are not working, for people who do work that get a tax credit if they, depending on the size of their family, which flows back to them. They could, one, have no tax liability whatsoever or even get money from the state depending on what their income is.
But I just want to clarify, and that's absolutely right. I want to clarify, though, that when we pay public benefits to people who, because their employer, because Walmart, McDonald's, these hugely profitable corporations are refusing to pay them a living wage, we are taking tax dollars, your dollars, Danny, my dollars, out of my paycheck. We are taking those dollars and using them to pad the profits of McDonald's and Walmart and Starbucks because our tax dollars are funding the wages they're not paying. So, I think that's indefensible.
My producer's head's going to explode. I have to take a break here. More after this on 720. Pat, you hold on the line. Danny, hold on the line. I have a Lou Malnati's gift card to give you for holding on so long. And oh, he left. All right, Pat, you get the pizza. More after this on 720 WGN. You're listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez. It is Friday night. We're heading into Saturday morning talking politics in the state of Illinois. Joining me in studio is Representative David Harris, who represents the 53rd District, and we have Representative Will Guzzardi of the 39th District. We have to give Pat a chance. He's been on hold so long, I'm going to give him a pizza. I mean, I can't deliver it to you right now, Pat, but I hope that you'll take our gift card when we're done. How you doing?
Good. Yeah, I just wanted to make mention of a few salient facts. We're dying in Illinois. That's what's happening here. And if we don't start working, if we don't do something, we are going to die. A third of our population has left. These are not the poor people who have left. These are the people with computer jobs. They know there's no future here. They've gone. Companies that have been here a long time left. I mean, I used to think Chicago had it because we have a deep water port. So does Milwaukee. I used to think we had it because we had O'Hare Field and we had Midway connection points for other parts of the country. So does Milwaukee.
So
only 90 miles away.
What would you like for the state of Illinois? What would you like to have happen?
First of all, I think they're going to have to do something about triple budgets or triple pensions where, you know, you don't get just one pension because, like, teachers, for example, most teachers get a regular pension, one pension.
Okay, I think.
But there are some principals who get three. It's $128,000. Well, I'm not for that. If it's an AFSCME pension, most workers get a normal pension, but some guys eat, you know, they eat it for lunch at the top. That, I think, should stop.
Okay, hold on a second, Pat, because I want to be able to address that, but I also am up against a break. I have to take this break right here, and I know that both of you would talk longer than I have. So we'll get to that idea of triple pensions and that kind of when we come back on 720 WGN. Thank you, Pat. You are listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase Studio. We have been talking to Representative David Harris, who represents the 53rd District, and Representative Will Guzzardi, who represents the 39th District. Representative Guzzardi represents the areas that encompass parts of Portage Park, Old Irving Park, Logan Square. Representative Harris represents Arlington Heights, Mount Prospect, part of suburban Cook County. And I want to give you each an opportunity to tell our listeners, to tell your constituents what you see, what you hope for 2017. What you're working towards, Representative Guzzardi? Yeah. Oh, I should probably give you a microphone. How's that?
That'd be great.
There you go.
Ah, that's better. My hope for 2017 here in Illinois and around the country is that we provide a fair shot at a decent life for more people in this city, in this state, in this country. I think right now, whether you're a person of color living in the city of Chicago, trying to raise a family, being paid low wages, whether you're In rural Illinois, seeing manufacturing leave your community and no opportunity for employment. I mean, I think what folks are finding is that it's hard to get by. And what I would hope for 2017 is that we, as government, we make it easier for folks to have a decent shot at a successful life, whether that means hiring folks, putting people back to work, raising people's wages, giving people better benefits on the job, expanding education, making higher education more affordable. I mean, student debt is just crushing so many young people. Making healthcare more affordable, right? Putting people, you know, just all of the burdens that are falling on working families. It's our job just to help folks lift those burdens, to give people access to a decent life. And I think that's our responsibility as government. That's why you all elect us, and that's why you hire us to do this job. And I hope that we can do a better job of that for you in the year to come.
Representative Harris?
You know, Will and I will fight our political battles out on the floor of the House of Representatives as reasonable people do. But, Patty, let me tell you this. We have in Illinois a great state. We have a state with outstanding resources, a transportation network second to none. We've got great agriculture. We have just wonderful universities. We've got a world-class city. We have hardworking citizens, and we have a great state. We have fallen down in one area, and that is our government at the state level. My hope, my desire, my all of my effort is going to be towards getting a reasonable budget for the state of Illinois that puts us on a solid path so that social service providers, businesses, the bond houses know that Illinois is now on a positive path. And I will tell you, even if we are able to do that, it's not going to solve the problem quickly, because the hole that we have dug is so deep that it is going to take quite some time to get out of it, but we can do it. I want to work with Will Guzzardi. I want to work with my colleagues in the Senate to make sure that we get a budget that works, work with the governor, and we got to move this state forward, because we've got so much to offer and we just can't let it go to waste. And I want to end on a note of enthusiasm and optimism for 2017.
And I want to encourage our listeners, if you live in either one of those districts, and whatever district you live in, please contact your legislator. Please tell them what's important to you, what's meaningful, how you are suffering during this budget impasse. And you know what? Also tell them what has helped. Let them know where there you have seen improvements or things that are failing. Representative Guzzardi, how can someone reach you?
You can go to our website, willguzzardi.com, or you can give us a call at the district office, 773-227-9720.
One more time with that number.
Sorry. 227. I almost gave you my cell phone number right here on the air. 227-9720 is the district office.
Representative Harris?
Also, I have a website, which is easy to track doing a Google search. Email is repharris@yahoo.com, and the district office phone number is 224-764-2440.
And for those of you who aren't quite sure who your representative is, who your senator is, whether you're in the state of Illinois or somewhere else, go to openstates.org. You can fill in your address and you can find out who your representatives are at the local level, at the federal level, and be informed, be a part of it. Again, I think as Representative Guzzardi mentioned, you know, it's so easy to say, why is that guy get something? Why aren't I getting my share? Be a part of the solution. I don't mean to quote Die Hard. Stop being a part of the problem. But I think be informed. And as Representative Harris mentioned, you know, this is a great state. We have so many opportunities. And if you work hard, there is a possibility to succeed. But you want to have it be a fair playing field. Thank you so much, gentlemen. I want to thank you and encourage you and welcome you back anytime you have the availability.
Thank you.
Good
Patty.
To be with you.
And
thank you.
I want to say briefly, thanks, Representative Harris. One of the finest colleagues I've got in the General Assembly. It's always a pleasure to spend time with you, dear.
I thought this would be a good.
Thank you, Will.
I thought this would be a good pairing. So I look forward to having you both back again. More after this on 720 WGN.
Beautiful house with a beautiful wife, and you may ask yourself, well, how did I get here?
How did we get here, James? How did we get James Vickery in studio with us? How did we get here?
How Isn't did it? We? I, well, I took 90-94.
Me too. It was the traffic was pretty light tonight. Joining us in studio is comedian James Vickery. We are in the Allstate Showcase studio. He's been patiently listening to Representative Harris.
I loved it. That was a great segment. That was
Thank you. I'm very proud of that. Mm-hmm. It's always good to have people from both sides of the aisle. Also, but from both sides of different perspectives. We have Eric Elk, who is a political strategist and a Republican. We have Kenjay Kubowski, who is a crisis communications expert and a Democrat. And James and I just sit here and go, I don't know what to think next. This is a weird week of news. I don't know where you guys want to start, but I was on the air when some of that news started breaking about the Russian video and possible Russian audio, unsubstantiated reports, and you sent me the document, which I waited until Dave Lundy posted it on his Facebook page, the same link, before I sent it to my producer, which had possibly that Donald Trump hired prostitutes to urinate on a bed that was previously used by the President of the United States.
Among other things.
The fact that I have to Google the words Donald Trump and golden showers is something that I've been doing that for years. What world am I living in that's like something that I even have to consider without words continue to escape me.
Yes.
Well, there is something that Eric and I agree on, and maybe we could start the program from a position of agreement.
Accordance, yes.
Eric, you want to start? What do we agree?
What do you agree on?
Do it.
Representative Lewis's comments that he believes that Trump's electoral victory was illegitimate and that he will not be attending the inauguration, the first inauguration that he is going to skip. Now, this is Representative Lewis, the great civil rights leader. Mm-hmm. I strongly disagree with that.
Interesting.
That's what the Russians want. The Russians are trying to pull us apart, and we can't play their game. And I mean, I have great respect for him, but on this issue, he's wrong.
Well, I agree with you, actually.
I agree with that. And I also, at one moment, I thought, you know, also BuzzFeed, which is not a legitimate necessarily. I've never thought of BuzzFeed as a news organization. CNN.
I thought it was entertainment.
I thought it was entertainment. Don't they have
It's actually where I go to learn about the core of myself.
Well, Anderson Cooper said the last time he looked at BuzzFeed, it had articles about condoms.
Yeah,
you know, how to get the 10 best condoms. He said, I didn't know that they trafficked in political news.
Yes. And I thought, at what point is this like actually beneficial for Donald Trump to say, look, you know, this is a, you know, fake news and journalism that has gone, you know, is really working against us. Like, it's a weapon for him to go, I don't need to talk to journalists anymore, to say that BuzzFeed is somehow a legitimate news site.
That
it's
was
not.
The scariest part to me.
Yeah, it's not a news site. I mean, you know, it's something for us to, like, I am not a journalist. I'm a broadcaster. So when I was reading that, I kind of felt like I shouldn't have been talking about it either, but I knew everybody else would. So where do I split that line?
Well, there are some things about that 35-page document that are, I mean, there's a reason why the president and the vice president and the president-elect were briefed on it.
Right.
It's not the intelligence agencies, the heads of intelligence agencies do not make it a point to brief at that level on stuff that's floating around.
But are those the documents that they were briefed on?
Yes.
It is.
Yes. In fact, Biden yesterday said he read all 35 pages. There are reasons why I think that the intelligence agencies treated this as more than just gossip and rumor. I think the author of the report, I think it's been pretty clear now, that he is held in great esteem, high esteem around the world by intelligence agencies. The sourcing, if you look at the sources, and not even mention the specifics, but look at the sources in there, they're all high-level Russian officials. And interestingly enough, there is a source D as in David, that is a close associate of Donald Trump, who set up, according to the document, who arranged for Trump's last two trips to Moscow, and who was with Trump in Moscow, and he confirmed that the Russians have been giving information or gave information on multiple occasions on Trump's political opponents, both Republican and Democrat,
right,
and that it was, quote unquote, very helpful. So this is someone right next to Trump, and it says he's a close associate of Trump, this source D. So there is going to be, I think, and the other reason why I think, aside from the unimpeachable expertise of the author, the high-level sources, but there's something else about the document that's fascinating. What's the one thing that we've been concerned about with Trump and Russia? That he's tied in some business deals and somehow
debt
with oligarchs?
Right.
The document says no.
That's not the problem.
That the Russians have tried. The Russians have been trying to get him into some business deals because they wanted to ensnare him.
Right.
Not because they wanted leverage over him as president, but because they wanted information. They wanted him to give up. They were trying to position him so that he would be forced to give up information on his Russian business partners, who are most likely enemies of Putin, some of the oligarchs. But Trump said never took the bait, and they didn't know why. So it clears Trump of the business deals. So I think there's some serious stuff there that's going to be looked at. And to me, the most serious thing is the fact that there's been some sort of direct contact going on between the Trump campaign or representatives of the Trump campaign getting political information on their opponents.
Eric, what bizarre airport novel are we stuck in?
I don't know, but I would say I think that, you know, while we're debating all of the issues with some of the nominees for the cabinet and investigating various different folks, the one thing I think we all need to be, you know, aware of, and I haven't read much about this or seen many stories on this, and that is what is actually happening in Russia, or what Putin's up to. I mean, I think that he is playing heavily in Merkel's race in Germany.
Right, and the race and a high official in France.
Correct.
Right.
And I think that there's, you know, there's been little really discussed on that, but he is definitely reaching back in to try to extend, you know, what became the Iron Curtain further to the east. He's trying to extend back west to, you know, pre-World War II time. And I think we really need to be aware of that.
Well, and why does Donald Trump keep saying, you know, I want to be friends with Putin? I mean, what benefit is that to us?
There is the last point as to why that 35-page document has some credibility.
Right.
But Trump's behavior has been bizarre.
It is.
He's carrying the water for Russia. Why?
It definitely is bizarre. But I think it'll prove out soon enough. But who knows? He could be outsmarting us all in trying to just play nice to lure him and try to appease, only to be able to hopefully drop a hammer later. I mean, who knows? I'm not defending him. I can't.
You're just hoping. You have a hope.
Well, the cabinet testimony this week, which was most interesting, Tillerson, the Secretary of State nominee, whose nomination of all the so far of those who have come before committee, his is the one that is teetering. Rubio's vote is the key. If Rubio decides to vote against him, it won't get out of committee with a favorable vote. I'm sure they'll send it to the floor for a vote anyway, but with no recommendation or an unfavorable recommendation.
Okay.
But Tillerson, Mattis, Pompeo, the CIA nominee, all very strong statements on a variety of issues, anti-Russia stuff, very hawkish. That made me feel good. And then I'm sitting there thinking, well, what's Trump doing? It doesn't make sense.
It's complete opposite.
It doesn't make sense. And then the Mike Flynn information, which came down today, late today, in which earlier this evening is now triggered a serious Senate investigation. They announced that they're beginning an investigation of Mike Flynn's contacts with the Russian ambassador the day before and the day of when President Obama kicked out 30-some Russian diplomats reaction to the hacking. It could violate the Logan Act. It also could be a backdoor way into getting into all of what's in that 35-page memo in terms of the contacts.
Right.
So that is going to be interesting. That's a serious thing. That's a real serious. The Mike Flynn stuff is not a joke. That's serious stuff.
James, how's your head doing?
Well, it is. It's an interesting. It's hard to wrap my mind around because I do feel like, not all across the board, this is a generalization, but like this image is being painted by Trump and perhaps some of his supporters, where you're more upset about enemies within the country rather than this potential. Like,
threat.
I might be more of a threat as this Los Angeles comedian, you know, who
or
leans left.
Right, or a journalist who's reporting on news.
Who
has
maybe progressive thoughts in the media compared to this a Russian operative. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like I'm viewed more as a threat.
We got a quick minute?
We only have a minute. Literally 30 seconds now? Go ahead.
After the break.
Oh, you want to go after the break? Well, then you go. Okay, Eric Elk, hold that thought to what James, the threat to the United States, LA comedian, or Russian operatives. Eric Elk, you had some thoughts on James Vickery's question about whether or not he's a bigger threat to the United States than a Russian operative.
Well, more on the statement that he made, and I think it's something we need to think about. I thought it was interesting. And that is when James, you mentioned the Trump supporters. And I don't know that I would say he has supporters. I think he has.
He absolutely has supporters.
He has fans.
Oh, interesting. What's the difference? Give me the distinction.
So look at, think about it like this. Kardashians, mm-hmm. Paris Hilton, Britney Spears. They all have millions of fans who follow them on Instagram and Twitter. They have a sex tape that gets released. They have a wild party or get in trouble with the law or something similar.
Mm-hmm. Salacious, something.
Their numbers don't drop at all. Mm-hmm. They actually increase. Supporters for a political person, you will see if you, you know, whether it was President Clinton, Hillary Clinton, whether it was President George W. Bush, whether it was President Obama, when they had something, a hiccup that they were doing, their numbers would drop. With President-elect Trump, it's completely different. His numbers actually start to have an upward trajectory almost. Mm-hmm. So that's why I say I think he has fans, and they are there regardless. They're not necessarily supporters.
And his support has his supporters. It's been dropping. I mean, he now has the lowest favorability rating of any incoming president in recorded history.
So what's his?
And it's dropping.
It's like at 28%.
It's extraordinary. And this is since the election. It has dropped like a stone. And I think there are various reasons for that. I think overall, the transition has been a disaster. There are two elements to the transition. One is picking your staff, picking your cabinet. But the other element is preparing to govern. And he is slashed and burned from a governing perspective. And that's what's important.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk more about the transition team, about what's happened in the last couple of days when it comes to the Affordable Care Act, which apparently some people don't realize is Obamacare. We'll talk about that when we come back. It is time now for our news with, I'm so excited to say this. Hi, Roger Badish.
Hi, Patty. Good to see you again.
Good to see you.
Welcome back.
Thank you.
You look refreshed and renewed.
Sure, let's say that.
Okay, we will.
I was in Springfield. It can't be that.
Well, yeah. Okay.
You're listening pretty late. It is Friday night into Saturday morning. We are live in the Allstate Showcase studio. Joining me is comedian James Vickery, who was here. We were all together, actually, on election
night. That's right. It's kind of a reunion.
With Ken Jacobowski and Eric Elk. And someday I am going to record the off-air conversations.
That was
language included. And I can't tell people they're being recorded till afterwards.
Right.
Otherwise, that's a Nixon
yeah, you can't
did.
Lose that.
That's a Nixon did now. We will point out that eventually got Nixon in a little bit of trouble.
It did not end
he wasn't
well.
The only president to do that. Kennedy did the same thing.
Well, so. A lot of them had the devices recording.
And I hope Trump has the White House bugged. Boy, would I love to read that when it's all done.
Well, if you're watching Designated Survivor, apparently they also have. Are you still watching that with Kiefer Sutherland?
A little bit. Yes, I am.
Because
I am
behind watching that painting, remember, that was they have. A recording
spoiler
device.
Spoiler.
Oh, sorry.
I missed that detail. Okay. Was that last episode?
No, I don't know which episode it is, but there's a recording device.
Okay.
Are you watching Designated?
I have not.
Designated Survivor is good. Yeah. I did see the first episode of Homeland, which is airing this Sunday, but Comcast on demand for free.
No.
Is offering it already.
Oh.
And I know Sunday night with my mother being in the hospital, I knew there's a good chance I'm not going to see Homeland.
Right.
Plus she doesn't. She doesn't get HBO. I think it's HBO, right? Or is it Showtime?
Showtime.
She doesn't get Showtime. So I knew I'd have to do something. So I watched
it
early. Yeah, it was very good.
It is. Here's the thing, though. I don't know where shows like Scandal or Designated Survivor go.
Right.
When this is now our actual, our real-time politics happening.
Sure. If
I don't know.
How do you one-up
if I were to write it? If I were to have written a novel about... Everything that's no people would have said, oh, it was very entertaining, Ken, but it was kind of unbelievable. No, not anymore.
Well, there was actually a storyline on Scandal where one of the candidates for the presidency is, he's more of a, you know, he's at the gun range and he's, you know, using all these really caustic words to describe immigrants and minorities and making fun of women and all, you know, all these scandals. And they are able to dismiss him from the election. And in a way, they handily get rid of him. And I was like, that's not what happened.
Well, we were talking about the transition when we left.
Yes.
And, you know, Trump has not made the move from campaign mode to governing mode yet.
Really? Because the tweeting seems like it's really elevated. He certainly has taken a step.
You know, there's a way of describing the difference between campaigning and governing. Campaigning is poetry.
Mm-hmm.
Governing is prose.
Interesting.
And he has not made the jump yet. He is still in campaign mode. He talks about everything having to do with Russia, the hacking, this 35-page memorandum of his unsubstantiated connections potentially with Russia. He views everything from his own lens as to how it impacts him.
Yes.
This is bigger than him. Well, this is the country. This is our democracy. This is our values.
The planet.
But he keeps talking about the election in Hillary. It's him that keeps bringing it up. I don't think.
I'm
way past that. Election's over.
Right.
This is about our country, about our democracy, about what Eric said, about the stuff that Putin is trying to do around the world. And he just can't get that out of his head. He is so stuck in, I want people to see, but I want to be seen as having won this election by a huge amount.
And it's because he knows he won that way. So one of the things people talk about with President Obama is he was a great campaigner, but not so great at getting the message across as the president, as
totally
somebody who's governing.
Absolutely true.
So, I mean, is there...
So maybe you need some poetry, though, while you're governing.
Ooh. Interesting.
Because I did think that was something Obama did, and I was a Barack Obama supporter, but I thought... as they were selling some of the stuff like the Affordable Care Act, that there could have been a little more speak to these real core ideals rather than...
And what was being accomplished or not accomplished.
Mm-hmm. Eric, I've often felt that we're in the position we're in now with the lack of public support for the Affordable Care Act, despite the fact that the number of uninsured has gone down 50%, despite the fact that we're in a historic deinflationary period for healthcare costs. Now, that doesn't mean...
Wrong!
No health? No, no.
I'm kidding. I'm saying
yeah,
that's
well,
what
of course,
would
that's
say.
Trump. There you go. Thank you, Mrs. Trump. But
sad.
I think it's the way the Obama folks failed to market this at the grassroots level at the time that this was all being discussed. There was a year period there where they let the Republicans just run with it.
Including
addressing the death panel thing. They kind of dismissed that, and people actually kind of – it was like that first little glimpse of sort of fake news idea. I mean,
were you there? Weren't you when this was going on?
I think that they did not shape that narrative and control the message very well on that at all. I think Republicans did a really good job controlling that message and
And even to the point of calling it Obamacare, sort of tying that around him.
Well, that
to the point where people don't even know that affordable care is Obamacare.
Right. Well, that and Republicans, I think, you know, did a really good job getting the facts and the figures out ahead of everyone else. And so it definitely people were more aware. And so rightfully they were scared and worried.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what's fascinating to me is when you When you look at the individual elements of the Affordable Care Act, otherwise known as Obamacare, folks are in favor of most of the major provisions. They don't want to lose the fact that their kids now can stay on their insurance until 26. They don't want to lose the elimination of lifetime caps, expenditure caps. They don't want to lose
pre-existing
conditions. What they don't like... And what the Republicans are really focused on is the individual mandate, where if you don't buy insurance, you can
be penalized.
You have to pay a fine. You have to be penalized in some way.
You get that tax form at the end of the year, you know, that shows like, oh yes, you were registered for this particular health plan, and so you have that. You can justify it to the government,
right? And people don't like that aspect of it, but unfortunately, that's the aspect that pays for all the other benefits. So. What's interesting is if you look at the arc of the Republican opposition in this campaign season to the Affordable Care Act, it was repeal first. Even Trump was repeal. Then people started figuring out on the Republican side, on the repeal side, hey, you know, there are some aspects of this that are really important that people really like, and these are our folks. So maybe we should replace it with something.
And they haven't, but they've had 6 years to do that, to come up with a plan that would replace that.
And that's why there are all sorts of crazy timelines running around. Mm-hmm. The House and Senate have now both passed procedural maneuvers that have passed both houses.
Right. To be clear, they have not repealed Obamacare.
No, they have not. But they've set the stage to do it. The question now is, what are they going to replace it with? And Paul Ryan last night said at the town hall that the first 100 days will be a good start to figuring that out.
Right.
This is going to take, I think, at least a year, potentially longer, to figure out.
Well, and at what point? Oh, go ahead, Eric.
No, I was going to say, I mean, there were definitely bills introduced, voted on to repeal and replace back in 2009, going into 2010. So, I mean, there are definitely plans that they can dust off, and I think that's what they're doing. But I think they're also doing a little bit of due diligence to kind of look and see, okay, over the last, you know, 6-7 years, what worked, what didn't. And so how best, if they're going to replace, what part are they going to tweak?
And, I kind of agree with President Obama, his comments earlier this week, where he's like, you know, call it Trump care, make changes. He didn't care.
Right.
He just, but they have to recognize the fact that you have a large number of people now, tens of millions that have health insurance that didn't have it before.
They did not
and there
have
are
access.
Major benefits in this that everybody, all of us in this room benefit from the lifetime caps being gone. I mean, there's a lot of things we benefit from, pre-existing conditions. So, you know, there's good stuff in there. Yes, costs are rising.
And primarily because there were fewer people who were younger, who were healthy, that did not enroll at any cost.
Right. I can explain this very simply. It took me a long time to figure it out, but now that I figured it out, it's actually pretty simple. The assumption was that with the penalties for failure to procure health insurance, that everybody would do that.
Right.
That of course pays for all the benefits and would keep the price down. Well, people have not bought.
No.
There are millions and millions and millions of healthy people, many of them young people, that you would like in a pool when you're trying to manage your risk. You want some young and healthy, some middle-aged.
You can't have all risk.
You don't want them all risk.
Yeah.
There's too many risk. That's what's happened. And therefore, the costs are rising. It's that simple.
So does the penalty need to be bigger, theoretically?
Well, you know, I don't know.
How do you enforce auto insurance? How come everybody has to have auto? I know that that's not the same thing, but at the same time, it's not that, to me, it's not that dissimilar.
Because you're afraid of what will happen to you if you don't have it.
I think it's too early. Something has to, you know, if that would be one thing I would take a look at. Look, it's working great in California. Costs have not risen there as compared to other parts of the country.
What are they doing differently in California?
I really am not an expert. I don't know. I know someone who is, but I should probably talk to him and find out. I think it's just being managed better. I would not be surprised that they have had a bigger buy-in from a broader risk population.
Right.
That's really that's what controls the costs.
Let's take a break here. Oh, Eric, do one more word before we go to break? Oh, wow. You took a breath and changed your mind. Well, because Lance has some thoughts, and we'll get to him when we come back on 720 WGN.
Sunday night, the Blackhawks wrap up the weekend at the United Center against the Minnesota Wild. Pre-game 5:30, puck drop at 6.
Chicago Blackhawks hockey is on 720 WGN.
Did you know that identity theft goes beyond what you can see on a credit report and what your bank can alert you to? Identity thieves can open new accounts in your name, rent or buy properties in your name, drain your 401k, and even file fake tax returns in your name. In fact, there are all kinds of identity theft beyond what you might expect. That's why LifeLock goes beyond credit monitoring to help protect your identity. We use proprietary technology to alert you to a whole range of threats to your identity. And if there's a problem, one of our U.S.-based specialists will work to fix it. Of course, no one can prevent all identity theft or monitor all transactions at all businesses. But with LifeLock, you can feel beyond good knowing someone is looking out for you in all kinds of ways. Join now for 10% off. Go to LifeLock.com or call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code LIFELOCK. LifeLock.
So how are your parents?
Not great, actually. I think we need to get them some help at home, but I don't know where to start. They're not taking all their medications. Dad shouldn't be driving anymore, but I have to work. Get my kids to school, soccer, band practice.
We felt the same way. The first home care service we tried was always late, and they sent different people every time. We just couldn't rely on them.
So what'd you do?
We hired Bright Start Care. They've been there when we couldn't be.
When you're looking for reliable in-home care, start with the best, BrightStar Care. Every client receives a personalized plan of care and specially trained and screened caregivers. Their registered nurses oversee all in-home care, including supervisory visits, to stay in touch with every client. BrightStar Care agencies have earned the Joint Commission Gold Seal of Approval. This means they've met the same care and safety standards as the nation's most respected hospitals.
That sounds like just what I'm looking for.
BrightStar Care was like calling a trusted family friend.
BrightStar Care agencies are independently owned and operated. Call 866-618-7827 or visit brightstarcare.com to find the BrightStar Care location near you and schedule a complimentary in-home consultation.
Listening pretty late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Tokay studio. Choking on pineapple. James, you watched that happen.
I did watch it. I saw you spit up a big chunk of pineapple right in front of me.
This is the hottest thing you've ever seen. Hot with a W. Joining us in studio is comedian James Vickery. We have Eric Elk, who is a political strategist. And we have Ken Jakubowski, a communications...
That
was you. What do you tell someone who's in crisis in communicating when they can't speak very well?
It's a true crisis.
That's Molly Rayner, who is joining us from straight from Sketch Fest at Stage 773. We wanted to get to Lance's phone call about Obamacare and the Affordable Care Act. Hey, Lance, how are you doing?
Good. How are you today?
Very well, thank you.
I just want to talk about, you asked a question about why it's working so well in California and not working well in other places. Well, the reason it's not working well in other places is because you have 30 Republican governors that don't want it to work well. That's the problem. And you have a Republican-controlled Senate and House that don't want it to work well, so they're doing everything they can to not let it work well. If you look in Democratic states, it's doing just fine. It's the Republican states, the ones that are trying to throw the monkey wrenches and everything else in there, is why it's not working in those states. Second of all, if you talk to, it was sort of a joke in a way. They went to one of the Trump rallies, and they asked a lot of his supporters, if you can keep the Affordable Care Act or Obamacare, which one would you get rid of?
Right.
And they were saying how beautiful the Affordable Care Act was and how they hated Obamacare. So basically, the whole thing about Obamacare is basically a hateful fight. They
right.
want to get rid of it because they just hate the man.
Well, meaning that a lot of people don't seem to realize that Obamacare is the Affordable Care Act. The Affordable Care Act is Obamacare. And we could actually call it Romney Care because it was based in a large part on the plan that Governor Romney at the time had of Massachusetts. So,
did you hear about Marsha Blackburn? She had a survey on her website and asked what should she do about Obamacare, and it came back 84% keep it. Now, she's a Republican congressman or senator. It comes back 84% keep it, 13% repeal. So now she's in this conundrum, like, what do I do now? So a lot of people have Obamacare. They want to repeal Obamacare. They hate Obamacare, but they want to keep their Obamacare. And a lot of people, they let their hateful emotions or their spitefulness motivate them to do things against their own interests, and that's sad.
It is. It is. But I think a lot of people do. I think you mentioned something earlier, Ken, about when people are afraid. They're told to be afraid of something, and that's where we're operating from, is fear. And that's not someplace where you can learn anything new.
No, it's how we've been governing for a while.
Yeah.
And it's how the Republicans have been in opposition to virtually everything President Obama has done for 8 years. They've been the big no party on everything. They have no ideas. They just don't want anything that he wants.
Well, that seems to be the case. Hey, Lance, thank you so much for joining us. Appreciate
it. Thank you.
Happy New Year, sir. I mean, so is it, should the Democrats then start governing or campaigning on a platform of fear? I mean, what's the answer?
Wait a second, though. I don't know how you can say that the, you know, Republicans are just saying no to everything Obama says. When you look at nationwide, since Obama's been in office, the Democrat Party has almost been decimated. 1,800 Democrat elected officials have lost since Obama came into office.
Well, I think that's for different reasons, though. That's something very different.
Okay.
And I think it goes back to what we talked about in terms of, I think, the biggest failure of the Obama administration during the 8 years has been to promote and seize the narrative on its policy initiatives. They pretty much have focused just on the policy, just on Washington inside the Beltway, while the Republicans have been out all across the country beating to death various policy initiatives, and you create a climate of distrust and of people being afraid before it's even enacted. And that's, the Affordable Care Act was that. Heck, even the bailout of the automobile industry. There are people who strongly oppose that to this day. It saved hundreds of thousands of jobs. I mean, it's extraordinary. That was a wonderful thing that they did. So I really do think that the Republicans have been winning on messaging for a long time.
Totally
a
agree.
Long time.
I agree with that.
At the grassroots level.
So. Molly, you're seeing a lot of shows at Sketchfest.
I am.
There's over 180 performances.
160 groups performing 188 shows in 8 days.
And how many would you say? Because I saw a couple of shows, and there has been a big impact on the election on
sure.
the shows and the performances. And not every group, but mm-hmm. what's kind of the sense that you're getting, whether it's from audiences or performers, and what the climate is like right now?
I think kind of what you guys are saying. There's a lot of fear out there. There's a lot of not knowing, and there's a lot of people putting their fear into their comedy.
Yeah,
and you know, expressing their opinions through laughter.
Because one of the things that James was mentioning is that he feels like, as a comic, like somehow we're being painted into this area of being a bigger threat to the country, that if we express ourselves, and at this level, when you're at Sketchfest, you know, Donald Trump's not going to address that, mm-hmm. but you know, the bigger version of that, the sort of extrapolated version of that, is Saturday Night Live. And I mean, I think for that, for, you know, for Alec Baldwin, for mm-hmm. anybody who's on the show, to have Donald Trump at 3 a.m, you know, tweeting is kind of like partly the goal, but also it's a little terrifying in a
yes.
way that he can sort of be manipulated to be angry at comics. Mm-hmm. It's a strange, I mean,
or at Arnold Schwarzenegger because his ratings weren't strong enough.
Who was a Republican governor? I mean, I didn't know that he supported, I guess he was he supporting Hillary? Was that, or Kasich? I believe he said.
Yeah, I think he stayed, he did not support Hillary, but I know he was not a supporter of Trump.
He was like USA Today, basically.
That's a good point. I hadn't thought of that. Yeah. Eric, you wanted to say something about that. Are comics a bigger threat to our democracy?
No, but on the, two things. On the Trump issue with Schwarzenegger, I wonder if part of that, you know, his attack through Twitter was to help generate more views
yep.
on the show.
Because he still produces it.
He's an executive producer.
Yep.
Secondly, I
yep.
think the best way to go at him or engage him is through some sort of humor and needling.
Right.
Like, that's the only way you're going to get through.
So you don't like, so my Bible quotes to him are not going to be the way to penetrate him?
No. I think you could be really funny.
What about the think pieces I've been sending him lately? It's like 15 pages.
I mean, that is a goal.
Who's going to read that?
I mean, Molly, did you ever think you would exist in a time when you could tweet at the president-elect and like go, there's a possibility he's going to respond to this?
No, never.
Yeah, this is bizarre.
Except for now.
Except for right now.
Yeah.
Now it's happening.
Yeah.
And you have a performance coming up tomorrow with Unlikely Company.
I do.
What time is your show?
6 p.m. at Stage 773.
How have the shows been going?
Amazing. We have incredible talent every year. this year has been exceptional. We had record-breaking numbers last weekend with patrons coming through our doors, and this weekend is showing to be the exact same.
It was really cool. I did a Patty Melt on Friday yep. night, and I sat in the audience before the show started, and there was a couple sitting in the back, and I was just sitting next to them. They didn't know that mm-hmm. it was my show, so I asked them what brought them into the theater, and they were visiting from Freeport, and they saw the advertisings, and I said, why'd you choose this particular show? And they said it sounded interesting, and I was like, thank you. It was a really wonderful audience. It was a lot of fun, and I can't explain. There's every variety of performance. Mm-hmm. The group that lights things on fire and gets naked. They were last
yes.
week.
Or yes, they were last weekend.
So they're.
I can't say their name on. I mean, I could spell it.
Yeah,
but
me too.
I can't say it.
Yeah, we can't say it.
We could spell it, but
we could spell it, but we can't say it.
Cannot say it.
F-U-C-T.
F-U-C-T.
Say that in your head. Just you, oh. Tom. Not anybody else.
Yep.
Yes.
I have taken the lid off the panic button.
Yeah.
You can go nuclear at any moment.
Do not panic. It's all good. And how did you see their show last week?
I did. Did you?
No, I did not.
Oh, yeah. I mean, they're great. Like, what they do is so over the top, but it's so accurate.
It is.
You know what I mean?
Last year, I saw a naked woman crawling over audience
yep,
members.
That's Allison. That's my friend Allison.
Allison. Did mm-hmm. she also crawl over?
She did. She all did right. that again. She did it again.
And how was Sketchy Bader?
I missed it.
You missed it. Yeah. Sketchy Bader was great. Katie Nixon and I were hosting it in our onesies.
In your onesies, I saw that.
We had a giraffe and dragon onesie. And Patty, Saturday is going to be even crazier because Katie and I are getting married.
Are you
at the
really?
Beginning. Yes.
James, come with me. You want to come with really? Me tomorrow? We're not getting married. I mean, we'll go to our wedding. Yes.
Brian, and it's a secret. But now it's not really a secret unless anyone's listening. And Brian Posen, because he's an ordained minister, he's going to do the ceremony.
Marry you?
Yeah.
All right. Do you just want Katie's money? Is that why you're
I want
this?
Her insurance.
Okay. See, this works. In the state of Illinois.
Yeah. Yeah, so that works. It's going to be a fun bit, but Sketchy Bader is going to be great. Yeah.
I'm looking forward to that. More with our guests when we come back after this on 720 WGN. You are listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez. We are live in the Allstate Showcase studio. When I say we, I mean comedian James Vickery, who's been riding sidecar tonight, listening to all the political conversations.
Loving it.
With our state reps and also with our political panel, Ken Jakubowski and Eric Elk. And joining us now also is Molly Rayner of Unlike a Company, one of the 160 groups that is performing at Sketchfest.
Yes, ma'am.
Over 8 nights.
Yes.
180 performances.
That's right.
And there are 4 stages running concurrently.
Simultaneously, yeah.
And then, so that means in any one night there could be up to like 30 some shows, like 32. If you start at 6 and you go to midnight.
Right.
I know.
Patty, my brain.
I can't. All the math.
We have shows every hour on the hour at the theater.
Go ahead.
What's the cost? And does someone buy like a general admission ticket and could walk and basically go from stage to stage?
Sure. So how this works is tickets are $15. You can also buy passes. You can buy a weekend pass, a day pass, and that'll get you into all of the shows. But one ticket, $15, gets you into one show.
It's about a 40-45 minute mm-hmm. show.
And we've got the best actors, the best comics from all over the world. This is the biggest sketch comedy festival in the nation.
Mm-hmm. It's so much fun. And the energy is amazing.
It is.
Because you have 4 audiences all in the lobby. And when the rope is let down, everyone just kind of goes into their theater. Mm-hmm. And it's crazy because I was standing on the catwalk and I watch everybody. And they're all packed and nobody's upset. Nope. Nobody's like frustrated. They're in this huge crowd.
It's such a good vibe. It's such a good energy over there. And something we talk about is that this festival, it brings nothing but good energy, good vibes, a good environment. There's no time for negativity. There's no time for
right.
fear. You know what I mean? Everyone comes in. They're all ready to have a great time. Everyone is so supportive of each other, especially the comedians that come in. We all just, all egos drop, right? There's no more, there's any more egos, and we're all just there to support each other and see what we've all been working on for the year.
Is the festival now going to be held in Chicago annually, or
it's
is this
16
just,
years.
This is the 16th year. It's our sweet 16, and it's a huge milestone. And like I said, it's the biggest sketch comedy festival in the entire world. And we have this Saturday and this Sunday will conclude it for the year.
Well, in 2000, It was Bush Gore and all that craziness that we had never seen that before.
Right. It was crazy.
And now at 2016, it's something, a whole bunch of stuff we've never seen before. And it seems to be multiplying every day.
Yeah. I don't even know where to begin with. I saw three shows and each one of them had something that alluded to that, you know, as far as whether it was fear or what I plan on doing, taking responsibility, I think a little bit of that too.
Sure.
But every group is entirely different. And there are ratings if people want to go, and they can find out at stage773.com. You can see the listings for all the shows. You can see if it's R-rated or PG-13.
Correct.
I think mine was
PG-13.
And I think I stayed within that.
Is it all day tomorrow or is it just in the evening?
Tomorrow's shows start at 5 o'clock and the last show is at 11 o'clock. And Sunday, I believe, shows start at 1 o'clock.
And so if I buy a ticket to, say, a show that starts at 5, and that show is done and you're saying it's about 45 minutes a sketch,
yeah,
do I then have to leave?
No, you can stay. I mean, that's the thing about this festival is you can, if you want to see more shows, you can.
I just have to buy another ticket.
You'd have to buy another ticket. Okay. Or if you want to buy a weekend pass, you can buy like a Saturday pass if you want. But, I mean, you come, you have a great time. We've got a bar there. We've got entertainment. I mean, it's just such
Is there food? Yeah.
There's snacks in the bar you can buy.
Quit trying to look how to sneak in too.
But you know what?
Like, can I buy one sneak into like?
Do you want to come to our show tomorrow night?
You know, I would love to, except I'm out of town and it's unfortunate.
You're asking all these questions, and I want you to come and experience it.
I tell you what, this would be great. I would love to come next year. You can absolutely count on me. I will be there. Eric and I are both going to go. Right?
You got to experience it tomorrow.
This is it the same weekend every year?
It's usually the weekend after the holidays, first weekend in January. After New Year's. Write it down now, guys.
Yeah, that's right.
It's plan on
it. It really is. And it's everyone that works there, everyone that runs the festival is just so great. I mean, it's
so much energy.
There's so much energy. It's a machine. We have the best volunteers, the best staff. When you come for one show, you don't want to leave. You want to see more shows. You want to stay and hang out.
Oh, it sounds like every show is a new experience.
It is.
Why wouldn't you buy a pass for the whole weekend?
And it's a whole different world. There are some groups that use multimedia, whether they're using projectors or they're musical or they're prop comic. I mean, some groups have like solo shows, like one person doing all different kinds of characters. I don't know. Is Meg Grunewald doing her show again? I know she did just the tip with an all-female group.
I can't remember. I mean,
but you have got, and there are a family-friendly shows.
Sure.
I believe on Sunday you have that as well.
Yep, you can see anything rated G to rated
to the other
rated FUCT.
Exactly.
Right.
Tom just got nervous again. He's like, I don't know where that falls.
Button. Oh God. He's ready
spelling,
to push the button.
What is spelling? How do I get to that one? it is one of the best things I've ever had the pleasure of being a part of, and I'm so thrilled. Brian Posen is just a fireball.
He is.
And they come running in. So what they do is they have all the people that are working. They're herding the crowds and they're, making sure people come in, they come out, they're having a good time. But they also come running in and they introduce the next group. They say this is our 16th year and 160 performers, 180 shows. And, I mean, even the performers, everybody feels like a rock star.
Yes. Well, given what has been going on in the country.
Yes.
And what we've just gone through and seem to be, instead of settling down into governing, it seems to be even more chaos on a daily basis, especially this week. Everybody needs to laugh and needs to just relax. This sounds perfect.
And in a room with strangers, all different backgrounds, all different
sounds
experiences.
Sounds like the perfect antidote to the stress that I'm sure everybody is feeling.
Well, comedy is this great barometer in that way. Like I've been kind of writing some material, some stand-up shows coming up. And it's hard. Politics is a hard thing to talk about in stand-up, especially, I would say, because it's just you and it's just your words. And you could feel it, and especially in some of the places like we perform. If you're in a western suburb
or in Highland Park.
Yes. And if you say what side you're from, there's this immediate barrier kind of thing. So as I was working on it, though, I thought like, the point is to reach the things that we all agree on.
Yes.
Like almost reach on this core human level is what I find myself looking to do.
One of the things I pride myself on this show is trying, aspiring to having people feel like, oh, I'm not the only one.
Right.
Right. And it may not be everybody. And it may not be your night. But that's the thing in comedy is like, oh, me too. I want it's that feeling of me too, or I felt that, or
exactly,
and of course comedy also has the element of surprise. That's so much of what Sketchfest I think really kind of goes on is like that element of surprise. Like
absolutely,
you just always something new, so fresh and unique.
Yeah, there's something, and comedy is evolving so much with technology and social media, and it's not just I'm up on stage moving around. I mean, you can there's so much technology. I mean, that's the huge thing this year that we're seeing, and You know, it's like you said, people are coming in. Nobody really wants to talk politics and get heated and get angry and get the fear. Like, people are ready to just chill out, relate to you, and have a good time, you know?
Although I did hear that one particular group had a blender with sardines.
That was me.
I know.
Yes. And we may be doing that at Sketchubator. You'll have to find out if you can come tomorrow.
So I mean, oh, by the way, that reminds me. Dan Aykroyd have that? Wasn't he doing a blender of sardines? I don't remember.
Oh, I don't know. Well, ours was a blender of an assortment of things. We had, so we, I can't, okay.
No,
we start out, do I have time?
Yes.
We start out with fruit. So the audience thinks, oh, cute, they're making smoothies. We're a couple, and he's making me a smoothie before my interview. And so we start out with fruit, and then he tells me that I have bad morning breath, so he squirts a tube of toothpaste in, and then add pickles, add sausage, add what else did we add? Oh, we added a whole apple. That's not gross though. We added ranch.
Well, with sardines, it is.
Well, yeah, that's true. We added a whole thing of ranch, a whole thing of sardines.
Oh.
Anything is gross with sardines.
Oh no, we drank it. We blended it and then drank it.
Yeah.
And the whole audience was screaming.
Yep.
Yeah.
And we hadn't practiced that. We were just like, this is what we're gonna do. We'll see what happens.
And so how did that go for you intestinally?
Liam and I were breaking quite a bit. It was hard not smiling. It was hard not to laugh, but because we had no idea what it was gonna taste like.
And how did it taste?
It tasted terrible. Oh, we put coffee grounds in there too, which actually masked a little bit of the sardine taste.
There's actually some for the whole studio here. She brought some.
Yeah, I did. Surprise. My mom
well,
was actually,
I've gotta go. Yeah.
My mom was there in the audience, and my mom out loud yelled, she goes, "That smells bad." And
no.
And we played it off like, God, those neighbors won't shut up. Like,
did she see what you did last year with Liam and brushing your teeth?
She did not. We actually have that online.
Does it involve
video.
Sardines?
No.
Okay.
No.
God.
So we do another bit where we're the same couple, and you know, couples do gross things together. Well, we're brushing our teeth, then we swap toothbrushes, then we spit toothpaste in each other's mouth. Oh. Spit mouthwash.
Yeah, more after this on 720.
Yeah.
You are listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate show. So I got so excited about, I was going to say Saturday morning. I never say Saturday morning. I always say it's Friday night, because if I haven't gone to bed yet, it's not Saturday morning.
No.
What's your rule, Molly?
You know what? If I go to bed at 1 p.m., that's bedtime. That's nighttime. It's time for bed.
It's right. Do you have room darkening curtains?
Yes, actually, my bedroom is in the basement. No daylight, not any kind of daylight gets in. So I have no idea what time it is.
Is it disorienting when you wake up too? Because you're like,
yes.
I don't. If there's never any light,
I have no idea.
She will adapt well to Alaska.
Yes, you will. There you go.
I also love sleeping when we get the chance.
Oh, I love sleep. That's how I opened my show last week for Patty Mills.
Yeah.
Is that I love my bed. I love my sheets. I love Egyptian cotton. I have like purple Egyptian cotton sheets, and I really do have 14 pillows on my bed.
You have to.
I have, and not like decorative pillows. These are all regular pillows.
Mm-hmm.
It started when I was pregnant, because when you are pregnant, there's a chemical in your body that's released that like loosens the joint so you can deliver a baby.
Oh.
But it's not isolated to just your hips. Mm. It goes everywhere. So it was uncomfortable for me a lot. So I would have like pillows under my arms.
Aww.
Under my legs. I'd have pillows under, and I look like I was being shot in a space.
Here I go.
I'm like, let's do this. So I love my bed. I love to sleep. When I wake up in the morning, I count how many hours it's going to be before we're together again.
Agreed.
That's
I start thinking, even right now, thinking about my pillow.
Do you not like your bed?
I love it.
See? Are you thinking about your pillow?
Yes.
Do you have a name for your pillow?
No.
My pillow is called Scrunchy.
I guess I should name my pillow.
It's a squishy pillow.
I never thought about naming my pillows. Now I'm going to.
When I'm by myself, I realize, by the way, because my wife and I both live in Chicago and Los Angeles, but she's always out there, so when I'm in Chicago, I'm usually by myself, and I sleep every night on the couch by myself.
Interesting.
Weird? Scale of 1 to 10, how weird?
Not weird.
If that's where you're comfortable.
Well, it depends how nice a couch do you have?
Is it a fairly big couch? Yeah, what kind of couch are we talking
about? It's a futon from 1974. No.
Is it an okay couch.
It's a comfortable couch.
Is it because you fall asleep watching television?
I like to. Yeah, I'll often do that. I don't know. There's something comforting about the couch.
Couches can be comfortable. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's...
Okay.
I feel like you're all, I'm okay.
We're not judging. No. No,
look,
we know.
Look, when I was at another stage of life and I was running around from one presidential campaign to the next in one state after another, you slept on couches almost every night.
Yeah.
Different couch every night.
I travel
you're
a
lot on different,
too. Yeah,
you're on couches. You get used to it and you learn to love couches.
Do you have a blanket and a pillow there or are you just...
I've
are you falling asleep in your clothes or do you have a...
No, I do... Try
Change.
To yeah.
get cozy.
On a good night, you there. Really get
stop
ready.
There.
What kind of pajamas do
Let
you
Let me tell
wear?
You my routine.
No. Do you floss on the couch? Do you floss on the couch? Jesus.
Do you gargle?
I do. Now
okay. Gotcha. What's up, Patty? What's up?
No, everybody. Do you know what the pajamas are? Is sweatpants and t-shirt, or what are you kind of pajamas?
I'm a boxers and t-shirt All right. person.
Eric, how about what kind of pajama situation you got?
Eric, you look like a wool pajamas guy. No.
A wool pajama. What do you? I think that Molly has someone watching
Footies.
Her on the live.
Oh, I do.
Live
I just,
feed. She's trying Footies. To figure out which camera.
Is that?
I think that they're both. That would be
oh, okay.
that one and that one.
Which yeah, one? I want to say hi to my Uncle Greg and my Uncle Kirk who are listening from Los Angeles.
Hello.
Are they uncles? Watching also?
They're watching, yeah. They're watching and they're listening.
Hello, everybody.
Love you guys.
I don't. If you go to WGNradio.com, you can see which camera is the one that you can be waving to. Roger, here, go ahead and wave Molly. Is it the one? Which one should she be waving at? That one?
Let's see.
Here, wave over here.
I can
first.
See her in Studio D Cam 3. Real good.
Hi. I don't know which does it say?
So just look forward.
Yeah, forward. So
and one. Wave right there.
Yep.
Perfect.
There you
Perfect.
Go. That's how you're
Hi, Uncle Greg and Uncle Kirk.
What should I do, Roger? I'm just kidding.
No, what should I do?
Oh, the list
pull
is long.
Pull the hat back just a little bit. Just a little bit. Get a little sun, a little light on your face.
Excellent.
You're okay.
Roger, do you have a bedtime routine?
Bedtime routine.
It's like you never get to sleep.
Depends
what
which
is
night
bedtime.
Of the week. No. Yeah, I kind of do.
All right,
so a little background real quick. One, because of my surgery, I kind of have to sleep on my back.
Okay.
I used to be a side sleeper.
No.
So I have to sleep on my back. So I sleep in the recliner in the TV room.
All the time?
Oh. Yeah.
Now, can I recommend that you do that? You get 14 pillows in your bed because you can actually have a recliner on your bed.
Yeah,
so you would
I,
have
and
pillows
we have a bed that where the head moves up and down.
Right.
We got that a long time ago, just after the surgery. I thought that would be good. Unfortunately, the bed turned out not to be that comfortable for me.
Well,
on top of that, Bridget, because of what she's going through, is up most of the night, tossing and turning, and so it would keep me awake.
So you don't get to sleep in the same bed anymore.
No, unfortunately, no.
I think a lot of people end up doing that, though. Like I, you know,
it's
my...
not because we
don't
just
wanna...
wanted to sleep apart. It's because of a lot of the health issues
right.
over the last couple of years has kind of done that to us.
Have you thought about his and hers recliners?
I was just going to suggest.
Well,
that.
Actually, we yes, because we now have room in the room I'm in.
Right.
Because Rufus. Got into it with the other chair that was in the room, and that is now garbage.
Oh, boy.
So
I
can move the exercise bike over and put another recliner in there.
I think other couples end up sleeping in separate beds because, like, Steve snores. Steve,
snoring. I snore.
Oh, do you really?
I do.
He snores. If I don't fall asleep first, I can't fall asleep.
Oh, man.
I fall asleep with headphones on sometimes, too.
Oh, my gosh. They're always on you.
They're always on.
Oh, I work through my podcasts.
Do you really?
There are two every night that I you know, that I help put me to sleep.
Tom, you fall asleep to podcasts too?
Yeah, usually. Oh. Or at least, you know, old episodes of Twin Peaks.
I do episodes of Scandal. I don't know why it's good background.
Sometimes.
I love watching Seinfeld.
Well, courtesy of the iPhone and Hulu, I watch the Rockford Files.
Oh, see, that's a good one.
History documentaries, I like to fall asleep to. Good British narrator.
Oh,
that'll
put
you
asleep. I am
out.
Mm-hmm. You guys are done.
I have a question.
Yes.
If you have the opportunity, does anyone hear Starfish?
Starfish.
What's starfish?
Starfish is
sounds
when
like
you like
weird.
Get on your bed
sounds, oh.
and you just go,
oh.
and then you just stay right there and don't move. You just sprawl out.
No,
that is
no.
my favorite.
That's your favorite position.
Just like
belly down,
arms, legs out.
No,
just
I don't
have
know.
All the space.
Well, I have multiple pillows.
Yes,
but I squish them up against the wall
uh-huh.
and I sleep with my head just on the bed.
Oh, no
oh.
pillow.
No.
See, I need just one at least under my neck. Like a little bit of that.
Yeah, I need something. That's
something.
Weird.
Guys, we all need to take pictures of us sleeping. Everyone is like, I'm picturing all of you right now.
It's
really
funny.
I
know.
I took a picture of my son. I never post pictures of my son's faces.
Mm-hmm.
But so I try to take ones that are, you know, whether they're like looking at something else. But Griffin crawled into bed last week when we were at Disney World with a Bible. and started. It was really like that was not a posed picture or anything. He just started reading the Bible. He goes, "But mommy, tell everybody that I'm only reading Luke 4, 5, and 6, which is the Star Wars versions."
Oh.
I was like, "Oh, sweetie, I'm not going to make that joke." But he was reading the Bible, and it was really sweet. The thing about Griffin, we all slept in the same room. My husband and my two sons. We had inflatable mattresses for them, and Griffin talks in his sleep way more than I thought he did.
Oh, like, my gosh.
Because I talk in my sleep, too, but Griffin will say things like, "Is that even legal? I need to look this up." I swear, that's what Griffin's talking about in the middle. I don't think you can get away with that. Someone's going to have to do something about this.
Wow. He's like in a courtroom and every...
Yes.
He's getting heated.
I know.
Is. He's worried about people's rights, apparently. Yeah.
In the criminal justice system.
I know. Yeah, he's having all kinds of like...
He was watching the Sessions confirmation.
Right. He's grilling.
How bizarre is that? When the person with the most pointed questions is a comedian.
Mm-hmm.
Or I've never thought as a Democrat I would find myself saying, "Thank God for Marco Rubio." I never thought that would.
Why would Marco Rubio say? I didn't see that part of
well,
the.
Through all
well,
the way,
as far as well, Marco
he's been
Rubio
very pointed and direct.
He's done a very good job, and he holds the key vote on the Tillerson Secretary of State nomination.
And you don't think he's? Do you think that he'll put it through?
It's unclear. It's unclear. He seems to be very troubled by some of the responses that Tillerson gave,
even in regard to like human rights issues.
You know, it won't prevent Tillerson from becoming Secretary of State.
Right.
They wouldn't block it. Certainly a Republican-controlled committee wouldn't block it from coming to the floor.
Right.
But it would nevertheless come out of committee with a negative recommendation, and Rubio will have made his point. And then you get – then it goes to the floor for debate. Remember, it's there isn't a huge Republican majority in the Senate, which is why you only need three votes to block any changes to Obamacare. Three people to switch, and you already have one.
But there seem to be some Democrats that are willing to vote against what would be considered Democrat type, like with the pharmacy, with the pharma bill that with cheaper, right, prescriptions from Canada.
I think so.
Because Booker said that it was because there were no regulations about how safe those medications were.
So, correct.
Eric, did you want to say something?
No, I would think Democrat Senator from West Virginia, Joe Manchin, probably break. I mean, I was almost thinking he was going to switch parties after this cycle, so I think he'll be on board. But I'm wondering, do you continue doing the show when you're sleeping, and that's what you're talking
Me?
About at night?
We're going back.
Did you do talk?
I often think that I have a show to do. I sleepwalk. I often think I have to get up and go to a show because I have this constant fear that I'm.
But how do you know you're sleepwalking if you're still asleep?
Well, I wake up. I wake up knowing what I was just dreaming.
Yep.
Like that often happens where I wake up and I know what I was. What I'm like. It's confusing because I.
But
know
you're out of bed.
I walk. Yeah. Oh, yeah. When I work on the road, I have to put chairs in front of my doors.
Oh my
hotels.
Gosh.
Yeah, I have to make sure, and I tell people that. Yeah,
trippy.
Even Patty, I wonder if you feel this too. Even when I am sleeping, my brain, I still feel it's still working. It's still. I don't know if this ever shuts down.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
It doesn't. But because you're always trying to solve a problem.
Oh, I'm always trying to solve a problem. I'm always thinking what I have to do. I'm always thinking about the next show, about the next thing, and it could be a year from now, and I am trying to plan it. Yeah. Even in my dreams, that's what I'm dreaming about.
I often have arguments in my. I know it's hard to believe. Let's take a break here. More after this on 720 WGN. You are listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase Studio. Joining me is Molly Rayner from Stage 773, Unlike a Company. And what's the name of the group that you, the sketch group that you do with Liam?
That's Hard Candy.
Hard Candy and Unlike a Company.
Yes,
she's
ma'am.
Performing tomorrow at 6 p.m.
Yes.
At Stage 773, which is it's on Belmont and Sheffield.
Yes, 1225 West. Well, Belmont and Racine, 1225 West Belmont Avenue.
1225.
And I got to give a shout out to my girl Katie Nixon with Rayner and Nixon.
And you're getting married tomorrow.
We're getting married tomorrow. It's going to be great. And we're going to do Havana Gila on the stage afterwards.
Excellent.
So anyone listening is going to know that, but it's a surprise otherwise.
It's a surprise. Otherwise, no one knows about it.
Everyone's going to be like, what is happening?
What is happening? Eric, you can go to the show tomorrow night. I think you should be there.
I think that'd be awesome.
I think you really
come.
Enjoy this.
Sounds pretty fun.
You should come.
It's amazing. Everyone go to sage773.com for information about the groups that are... It's only two nights left of performances.
Yeah, only two nights left.
Two nights
and
left.
They're going to be great.
We need to do a wrap party next week, like a end of performance, sort of a have some food and drink and enjoy and talk about what happened over Sketchfest.
Yeah.
Also joining me is Eric Elk and Ken Jacobowski, our political team. Power to the people right now. I know you had other titles for the segment. I'm not sure what other ideas. What was it? Show Enough was one of it? Was one of the ideas?
It was something along those lines.
It's going to be an interesting week by week. The inauguration's next week, James.
I know.
It's next Friday.
I remember, Ken, we were here on election night, and I remember you said something. It was all news was still coming in. This was even before a concession speech and all that, or acceptance speech kind of thing, celebratory speech. But you said, everything we know about American politics has changed. Oh, it totally changed. It's like you knew it, like... And every day, it's a case of first impression. Stuff is going on, like the press conference from earlier this week. I've never seen a more unpresidential press conference.
It was crazy.
But here's the thing. You know, you were talking about comedy to kind of bring these things together. Two things happened this week that I thought were utterly hysterical that were from comedy. First, from the world of politics. Mm-hmm. First, James Comey, our FBI director, testified, and he was asked about whether or not the FBI was investigating Trump's ties to Russia. And he said he didn't comment one way or the other on a potential investigation. I laughed so hard. I thought that was hysterical.
Because he had press conferences.
During the campaign about Hillary not once but twice. And the other thing, which I thought was funny, I've forgotten what the second thing was. Reliving the Comey moment was so hysterical.
Yes, Eric, you wanted to say something in response to that?
No, I just
does it seem a little strange that he's saying now that he does not comment on open investigations when that seemed to be completely the opposite case, when he not only holds a press conference, but also sort of imposes his own impression, his opinion of the person who's being investigated?
Yeah, I think Comey's got some problems now.
Yeah. And the Wall Street Journal tonight has called and has editorialized. They've said he did some great things, but it's now time for him to do another great thing, and that's resign.
Wow.
So,
I found the second thing that was funny.
Yes.
If you watch Trump's press conference, he had an attorney that appeared for about 20 minutes.
Yeah.
Do you know what law firm she's with? She's with a law firm that in the year 2016 was voted the number one law firm in Russia.
No.
Honest to God, I swear to you, you cannot make this up.
No way.
Look it up, folks.
Snopes it.
You can't make this up.
That's a job right now was Donald Trump's lawyer, his attorney at the press conference, part of a law firm that is the number one law firm of Russia years ago. But you know what?
This year? This year was voted number one firm in Russia.
I don't know.
You just can't make this stuff up. It's like, kidding me.
Did you hear what she said at one point about divesting his investments and that he wasn't going to be because that wouldn't be practical, but also because he can't unknow that he owns Trump Tower?
Yep.
She used those words. I was watching it, and
Mike Pence, and I saw everyone chuckle.
Unknown. Unknown is not a verb.
It reminded me of President Clinton.
Yes. What is is?
It depends on what the definition of is.
Yeah, I got to get a law degree so I can say these stupid things.
I don't know about Eric. I'd like to get your opinion on this. I'm not bothered by what he has done with his son-in-law being appointed to staff.
I am.
And I'm not bothered by what he's done with his business. It doesn't bother me. It's not perfect, but it's unfair, I think, for us to expect him to divest. It's impossible to do.
No, I agree with that.
We've never had a president who's been an active businessman and who did not come from the world of politics.
Right.
Right. Well, Rockefeller, when he was VP, he didn't have to. Right?
Well, normally this has been dealt with at some point along the way. If you're a businessman, you run for governor, you run for Senate, so you have a long time to deal with this. We're dealing with this in real time.
Right.
I have a question, serious.
Okay. Yes.
How do you think Trump sleeps?
I don't think he sleeps well because he's always tweeting at odd hours.
But when he does.
That's a good question. I picture a sleep mask.
Why am I
Wait, what did you say?
A sleep mask.
I was picturing more clawfish.
Do you think he starfishes?
100%
Boom. Starfish?
No.
I don't know.
It depends how big his bed is.
Thank you.
You should be glad how much self-editing I just did.
How many pillows do you think is on Trump's bed?
No, but do you think like boxer and t-shirt? Are you thinking like silk matching pajamas?
No, I don't think about that.
I picture the sleeping pajamas with the sleeping cap.
Oh, did he have like a nightcap? Oh,
like I'm thinking like more Scrooge-ish. Like, yeah. The little candle you blow up.
Like a nightshirt then, like a long, like a nightgown kind
of
thing.
One of those long nightgowns.
Yeah,
that,
yeah, I think
yeah,
so.
Yeah,
like
yeah
a
that you wear in the hospital.
The kind of has like the buttons on the back.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
I think he's got cute jammies.
Do you think he's got
cute
jammies?
With little cute, like his holiday jammies, probably like snowman.
I think probably he wears little slippers.
Little slippers? Little
little leather slippers.
Almost like little genie slippers where they kind of like have little tassels. They like curve up.
Tassels, yeah.
Tassels.
Something effete, whatever. Yeah. Whatever.
A onesie, Patty. Maybe
a
he
onesie?
Wears a onesie.
Maybe he wears a onesie. You
let's tweet
up?
Him and ask.
If you wear a onesie.
Better than yet, let's get his phone number and call him at home.
Okay, let's not do that. Let's put it.
Patty and I prank called one night, didn't we? Prank
no,
call
nobody.
Someone?
That never happens. No, no.
Prank call the president-elect of the United States.
Never mind. Oh that never God, happened. We've never done that.
Never done that.
I take it back.
I don't know what you're talking about. Let's take a break and find out what we're talking about. Better start learning the words now, everybody. Just start learning the words. You can hum along for a while until. Oh, you just got nervous there, Ken.
Yalublu klesiva yuzhenchenu.
Oh, I don't know what that means.
It means I love beautiful women in Russian. That's what Donald Trump mumbles every night when he goes to bed Russian.
Maybe his favorite movie is Hunt for Red October, and he thought that Sean Connery was really Russian. I don't know.
I think it was Reds.
Was it Reds?
The movie Reds.
I've never seen Reds with Warren Beatty.
Oh, awesome.
I've never
movie.
Seen that movie. Yep. I've heard great things about it.
Trump would be Tolstoy.
Now, by the way, it's not just that, Tom, you did find out some information about Donald Trump's attorney who appeared at the press conference.
Yes, I did. It's right there on CNN Politics. Law firm representing Trump won Russia award in 2016. Mm-hmm. Morgan Lewis, a law firm representing President-elect Donald Trump, was named the Russia Law Firm of the Year last year by a group that ranks legal organizations.
Not
you
a real news
agency.
You can't
make this stuff up. It is bizarre.
Yeah, okay. Come back when you have something other than CNN.
Clinton News.
Fake news! Fake news! Yeah. CNN fake news!
But did you see where C-SPAN flipped from covering the, was it Congress, and it was 10 minutes of Russian broadcasting?
C-SPAN.
It was C-SPAN.
Really? Yeah.
Yes. Well,
so the last paragon of American news.
C-SPAN does cover the Russian, you know, their one of their channels that they have in their whole closet of channels. And they were still investigating whether or not it was an internal hiccup or if they were actually hacked.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm not sure.
How weird is that if you're watching C-SPAN? Well, one, if you're watching
Maxine
C-SPAN.
Waters and at Jennifer the well Hines. Of the house, you know, talking.
I don't know if it was Mike Pompeo or I know it wasn't Tillerson. It might have been Mattis. I'm not sure. Somebody was being questioned yesterday. And at the early part of the hearing, one of the first questions was on the Russian hacking scandal. And as the guy got into his, as the senator got into his question, and as soon as the word Russian and hack was said, they lost all power in the room. All the television cameras went off. Everything was off for about 10 minutes.
Really? I did not hear
it's
that.
It's very strange, yeah.
This is all just wow. such a weird...
As
weird
you started stuff. To say that, I just started to choke a little bit. Oh, someone, I don't know if that's related
it's
or
been
not.
Really, someone just cued yeah. the the sabotage of the comedian's throat. Vocal cords must be constrained. Oh, by the way, totally off topic. We were watching. Did anyone see? Has everyone seen Rogue One yet?
I haven't seen it.
No. Remember, I don't go see those movies.
Yes, you don't go. You don't like Star Wars. You have not seen it. Tom, you have seen it.
I have seen the Star War.
I enjoyed that so much.
Oh man, I'm opposite.
Really, you're not like Rogue One?
I thought it was one of the weakest Star Wars movies. One of the weakest movies I've seen this year.
Roger, have you seen Rogue One yet?
No, I haven't. Don't tell me a thing about it.
Oh my God!
Shush. Shush.
Spoiler alert, they steal the plan.
No.
Well,
I already knew that because I saw the original.
The Titanic sinks too.
I will say this: it glides nicely and neatly up to the very first moments Star Wars.
I figured it would.
I am glad that you brought up movies because I saw one that I highly recommend people don't walk to go see, that they run to see this movie. Hidden Figures.
I had no idea. I was watching the HBO making of Hidden Figures, and I am blown away by this part of history that I had no idea. Because I pride myself.
Nobody knew about this. It was a wonderful film. It
unbelievable.
What a wonderful movie this was. I think everyone will enjoy it.
So this is about the women that were involved in NASA's launching of John Glenn's
early days of the space program.
The mathematicians who were women, black women.
Three black women.
Mm-hmm. And John Glenn trusted them. I heard a
what did the smart girl say? He didn't say the black girl.
Well, this was before computers. And they were plotting intricate entrance and exit points in our atmosphere. And if you're wrong, the spaceship burns up.
Right.
And there were all sorts of other things. I don't want to give it away, but each of the three women went on in different ways. They were friends, and they each went on in different ways and became stars within the NASA system.
In their industry. It was Katherine Johnson, who I believe last year just won an award from
Presidential
President
Medal of Freedom, I believe.
That's right. Yep. And then it was Dorothy Vaughan and Mary Jackson, who were all crucial in the space program.
This was an extraordinary film. It's one that I will not forget, and I'm probably going to try to catch and see again.
Really?
I would highly... you have to run to see this movie. It is a beautiful story, and it is so well told.
Yeah.
And Kevin Costner, by the way, is outstanding in supporting actor role.
His interview in regards to the movie, and he did such a great job of talking about how when you become part of a process in the filmmaking, and you meet with the director and you have ideas along the way. Because I just recently was on the set of Chicago Fire, and I was struck by one of the actresses like stopping in the middle, going, "Is this the way I should go? Or is this, you know?" And not like, "Am I motivated?" Not like in a diva way, but having a real conversation with the director back and forth. And Kevin Costner said that doesn't always happen. It falls apart. Everyone comes in with these ideas and these plans and these noble goals, and he said that every step of the way, the director, the actors, even the set, everyone on the set, like, it was as though they were so incredibly invested in how important this was. Musicians, I think it's is it Pharrell?
Yeah.
And but there are three. There's Pharrell. There's who was the one that does all the Beverly Hills Cop. I can't think of the name.
I can see the face.
You'll know it when I
see the face, but I don't know.
It's all
the music was excellent. That I will
now
say.
I need to Google the
and
music.
They had some excellent
Who did the
period
music
in the movie.
Cop?
Did that movie just come out? Is it fairly
within the last 2 to 3 weeks? I think. But I just cannot recommend this.
Herbie Hancock. I want to say Herbie Hancock. Yeah. I didn't find it. I remembered it before I brought it.
Yeah.
Up.
I just couldn't recommend it more highly.
Yeah, this is it looks absolutely amazing, and I definitely want to see that movie. And then, by the way, I've hardly seen any of the movies that are going to be nominated for Academy Awards. I saw nothing that won Golden Globes.
I didn't either.
You get your screeners?
I was just going to say I have my screeners, I know, and it's so funny. I'm a member of the Screen Actors Guild, and so I have Jackie, I have La La Land, I have Fences. I have not gotten Hidden Figures. I'm sure they're nominated.
I haven't gotten that one either.
I saw Jackie two nights ago.
I saw the first few moments of it.
I thought Natalie Portman did an excellent job. I'm not sure about the film itself.
Okay, fair enough.
It was interesting. I would recommend people go see it. I think it's a good performance, and it captures an interesting time. Mm-hmm. And it's fairly accurate in terms of events that occurred.
Right.
It seems a little forced.
I mean, the first few minutes that I watched, it seemed a little bit drawn out.
I don't think Jackie Kennedy comes across well.
Yeah, that's what
in
I was
the film
right. But it is the day. It is in the
it's
days
in
after
the immediate days after. Yeah, I mean, it's hard for people now, especially living in the world that we live in now, with everything just in chaos. Politically, it's hard for people to understand what was going on in the country when you've had a president who was assassinated, which had not happened in that modern time.
Right.
It was television. You know, Jackie Kennedy was right there, and he died in her lap. I mean, basically, I mean, there was so much going on, and then of course Oswald gets assassinated on right, national live television on Sunday. There's just so much that was going on at that time in the world. The country didn't know what was coming next. There was so much concern that this was all being done by a foreign power. Mm-hmm. Nobody knew what was happening, and the film did not really, I think, communicate that well enough. So some of her push, you know, two steps forward, three steps back, two steps forward, one step back on decision making, I think, was lost. It made her look indecisive. It made her look right. flighty. Mm-hmm. And she wasn't. She was just going through incredible trauma. Jeez, yeah. At that time. Right. And the one poignant scene was what I thought one of the most poignant scenes was when she has to tell the children that their dad isn't coming home.
Yeah, I can't even imagine. I look forward to seeing it. I really haven't had the time to see any other movies. Have you seen anything, James? Like La La Land? Did you like it?
I liked it a lot. It's entertaining. You know, it's right. not gonna.
My mom watched Manchester by the Sea. And
did she cry?
She did. She said that she rarely notices the music. And she felt like this was one of those times where the music really reflected the movie in ways that she hadn't really thought of before.
I spoke with four or five people. Everyone independently mentioned that it is the saddest thing you're ever going to see. Wow. And I went to a film about 3 or 4 weeks ago. And as my film exited, I saw other people coming out of another theater, and they were all in tears. And I said, "I bet it's Manchester by the Sea." I looked, and it was.
Wow, that's so bizarre.
Bridget saw that also. With mm-hmm. one of her girlfriends.
Right.
And again, she says it was a beautiful movie, very down, and she would never see it again. and we saw La La Land together the other night, and both agreed that about 90% of the people that I follow on Facebook think it's way better than what we thought it was.
Interesting.
Yeah, we didn't think it was you know, the top movie of the year yet.
Oh.
I don't know why. It just, and I like music.
It was so good that you can hear Molly just yawn.
I'm so sorry.
Yeah, sorry.
Oh my God.
We shouldn't have talked about your bed so much. You're ready to get
we can edit that.
Here's the thing, Patty. I'm just thinking about what I'm naming my pillows.
By the way, we got a message from a listener who said that we were asking about how Donald Trump sleeps and they posted Satan never sleeps. But that's from a listener, not from that's listener. The views and opinions of listeners who post on my wall.
Are not the responsibility of WGN.
No, right. not at all.
No, not at all. Just you know, that's just. Are you going to name your pillows, James?
No, well, I have two pillows. They'll be on my couch, and I will fall asleep to probably an episode of American Dad or a British documentary tonight.
What's American Dad?
It's a cartoon.
It's a cartoon.
It's from the Family Guy.
It's like Family Guy.
Yeah.
It is. Same but, people. Well, like Family like. Guy is a little gross generalization there, Molly.
pardon me.
Why is that?
Please continue.
I feel like it's a little bit of a sharper narrative than Family Guy. I like it more. That's why I do this gesture here with my hand.
Yeah, I'm not sure what's happening there.
No, it's good.
I'll pay to.
There you go. By the
that
way,
was really good.
That's good.
Thank you.
What is that? Is that a?
It's Lois Griffin.
It was Lois. Yeah.
Do you watch any of the like Family Guy, American Dad, any of the?
I'm a cartoon.
Modern
Burgers.
Family is
love.
The
Modern Family.
What do you get?
What's Modern it? Family.
Modern Family to watch and television. What do you watch, Eric?
I like old Seinfeld reruns.
Oh, that's right. You were saying that
that's
earlier.
Still top five. For me.
Yeah, I don't have anything.
I'm
have
still
nothing.
Working through The Wire.
I've only done two seasons of The Wire. What
I'm on middle of year three, season three.
Because it was the Russians, the second season, right? With
the docs.
Yes.
And all
that. What's season three? I don't know. What is it? The mob? Is it?
I'm not going to say.
It's
been like spoiler. 25
years. Do you want to be spoiler alert?
It's amazing. You can go and binge watch these things and you can avoid the spoiler alert.
I'm surprised that the series The Affair is still on. Is it on Showtime?
I watched the first year and I kind of missed an episode or two and I fell behind and I need to catch up and watch, binge watch and get caught up.
Yeah,
I enjoyed elements of that.
I watched the first episode this season and then haven't seen anything since.
Yeah, it's a weird series. I thought the first season was really good because it told it from the angle of the way she saw it, the way he saw it, and then
it was
each
really
character.
Cool.
It was fantastic.
Hey, Homeland Sunday night.
Yes.
If you're going to be watching Pittsburgh and Kansas City, the football game, which was supposed to be on at noon, they've now switched it to 8 o'clock because of weather.
Okay.
And you're concerned about the about being conflicted out, you can go, if you've got Comcast cable, you can get it now free on demand and watch the episode.
How was Homeland, the first episode?
I thought it was great. Excellent. I mean, I love it. It's just a wonderful series.
I love Manny Patinkin.
I just love
him. He's good. There's a president. I'm not going to give it away. You'll see. Yeah, he's great. Yeah, he is so good.
By the way, if you watch Chicago Fire, well, I'm going to ask you if you. I'm going to watch Chicago Fire on Tuesday. That'll be my episode.
I can't wait.
As a nurse.
This Tuesday you're on?
It's coming up on Tuesday, yes, the 24th.
And what time is it?
No, it's January 24th. So that's not this week.
That's next week.
A week from this Tuesday.
Yeah, I just saw it on Facebook. One of the other actresses, it was supposed to be on this past Tuesday, but President Obama's speech preempted our episode.
Oh, come on.
I know.
Thanks, Obama.
Thanks. That's exactly what she wrote. Thanks, Obama.
He continues to mess things up. Yeah. Fake news.
Hold on. My episode will be on January 24th. I'm on hold for another episode. So kind of excited.
Congrats. Nice. That's great, Maddie.
That's great.
I say come this way. You're The patient is in room 12. I don't know.
Don't even remember your lines?
I don't remember my lines. Yeah. I don't, it's something paramedic.
She left it all on the screen.
Yeah, I put everything out there. Mark Carman is up next. Don't forget, go to stage773.com. Go see Sketchfest. And I look forward to seeing you tomorrow night. Congratulations on your pending nuptials.
Thank you, Patty. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Eric Elk, we'll see you back next week.
Yes.
And we don't know what night yet. We have to figure that out because it could. Otherwise, it's two whole hours of politics on Friday nights. It's the only nights I can get reps in, too. So we'll figure it out. Maybe we'll do it again. I think it works. And we'll figure out the title for it.
Are we thinking next
Whatever
week Wednesday?
Night, well, I know you're traveling, so you let us know.
Okay.
Pending your travel schedule.
Let's tentatively
and Dave
say
Lundy.
Wednesday.
We'll see. Tentatively Wednesday. I like Wednesday. Wednesday work? We're doing a schedule on the
I love hump day.
James, when are you going back to Los Angeles?
I'm still here for over a week. I'm at St. Charles Zanies next week.
And Cigars and Stripes
tonight. And
Cigars
and Stripes tomorrow night. Right. Oh, yeah, later tonight.
We'll see you next week then.
All right. All right. Good.
Thank you so much. This is Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago, WGNRadio.com. Thank you, Tom, for everything this week. I look forward to working with you again.